KLO, 1690 AM, dans Montréal, Québec.
Pour CGLO News, I'm Kumaran Satgurnathan. On Tuesday, April 29th, a violent thunderstorm caused a serious power outage at the Maisonneuve-Rosemont Hospital. The failure of the generators left the intensive care unit and the surgery block in the dark for hours. It also delayed operations and forced intensive care patients to be transferred to the emergency room. According to Dr. Mark Brosseau, a lung specialist at the hospital, the storm also broke multiple windows, lightly injured a nurse, and trapped people inside elevators. The situation sparked criticism of the Legault government's decision to put off renovating the hospital. On April 30th, Atollah Tarar, Pakistan's information minister, said that credible intelligence reveals that India intends to launch a military strike within the next 24 to 36 hours. After the deadly terrorist attack in Kashmir last week, which killed 26 people, India has accused Pakistan and its militant groups of being responsible for it. Tarar argues that India used the attack as a false pretext for a strike, and he adds that any such military adventurism by India would be responded to assuredly and decisively. Kashmir has been the subject of conflict between India and Pakistan for decades now. This terrorist attack has further generated serious anger in India, and authorities are in search of the suspects. The Quebec government has announced a plan to ban cell phones in schools. The move expands the ban on cell phones in the classroom that has been in place since January 1, 2024, to cover the entire school day, including breaks. A special committee studying the impacts of screens on young people recommended the plan after it reported cell phones were impeding students' ability to learn. The committee's full report is expected on May 30th, and the ban will start in the next school year. For more, go to cglo.com/news or follow CGLO News on Spotify.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM here in Montreal. Hope everyone's doing well. What a weekend we had in the world of sports. What a week. Week, weekend, everything. Oh my goodness. We had unbelievable action in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll get into that. The NBA second round tipped off last night. We'll get into that. Major League Baseball really picking up. We'll get into that. And I'm sorry, I'm exhausted. That Winnipeg-St. Louis game, just how could you not be on the edge of your seat for that? Are you kidding me? Not to mention Miami Formula One Grand Prix. We'll get into that. We'll get into all of it here on the Tommy John Show. And if you're new to the program, we're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. Follow at the Tommy John Show, where you can get all the latest news from the program. So we'll start off with the Stanley Cup playoffs. We have to start off there. And in past years, yes, we've had remarkable first rounds. But I don't remember a first round with so many good series. So many good ones. Obviously, Winnipeg, St. Louis, that was seven games of bedlam. Nuts. Not to mention that Dallas-Colorado series, which we will get into, was an all-timer. Even the LA-Edmonton series. I know Edmonton won in six, but the first four or five games of that series, apart from game two, were phenomenal. That series was unbelievable. Minnesota-Vegas was phenomenal. Like, look at all these series. The Eastern Conference wasn't as good. You just had straightforward series. But even Montreal played Washington tough. They did. Like, this was a phenomenal, at least out west, it was one of the great first rounds I can ever remember. We'll start off with Winnipeg and St. Louis, which wrapped up late last night. So the Blues were on the road. No road team has won. But they know if they can get after Hellebuck, who might win the MVP this year. He has the Vezina locked up. For some reason in postseason play, he is nowhere near the goaltender that he is in the regular season. And that's not anything different from other sports. We've seen quarterbacks be great in the regular season, not as good in the postseason. We've seen pitchers, Clayton Kershaw won, if I were to pick one that the media went after, who's just nowhere near as good in the postseason as he is in the regular season. It just happens all the time. And it's the same with NHL goaltenders. Hellebuck is nowhere near the caliber of goalie in the postseason that he is in the regular season. And it started off rocky for Winnipeg. St. Louis were up 2-0 early on in that hockey game. And you know what people in Winnipeg were thinking, and Jet fans all over the world. They're thinking, oh my goodness, Hellebuck shrinking again, and we're losing in the first round as the better team again. And they slowly chip away. They get the Perfetti goal in the second period. First period, Winnipeg were awful. Second period, they completely turned the game around. They were the much better team after that. Perfetti gets the goal to cut it to 2-1. But then St. Louis come down, score again. It's 3-1. And credit Winnipeg. The way they came out and played the second period, once St. Louis got that 3-1 goal, I thought they were going to just fall down after that. Just not get up. That was the last punch. They're knocked out. It's over. But credit. They came out in the third period, and they were the better team. Nothing was happening for them on the actual sheet, on the scoreboard, but irrelevant. They kept moving, kept going at it. They pull the goalie, get one. They got one. They got the big one. You 3-1 versus 3-2 is a different ball game. And man, to think that they scored one with the goalie pulled. One. Let alone two. And the last one, I don't know if you people who are listening saw the game. There's about, 40 seconds left in this game. 40 seconds, yeah, I'd say. Matt scramble in front. Binnington makes the save. Oh, did it go in? I don't know. There's all that conversation. And everyone in the arena is standing up, and they're getting nervous because it is getting to that point in the game where you need to score. Your season's over. And I think they were showing the latest goal ever scored in a game seven, the force overtime, was 2 seconds or something like that. It was really, really close to being, I think, 2 seconds. So anyway, odds were not on the Winnipeg Jets side. They were not. But they kept plugging away, kept throwing pucks in the net, and eventually, you could say, for a team that's just been getting heartbroken all over the place the last few years in the postseason, finally got a break. Finally got one. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, here's how it sounded on TNT last night. So that's how it sounded on TNT last night. 1.6 seconds. 1.6. And the Winnipeg Jets tie it up. Then they play in overtime. Nothing happens, but Winnipeg were the much better team. And in overtime, man, the second overtime, I can't even talk, they get it done. 4-3 in double OT. The Winnipeg Jets move on. In one of the great series I can remember, every time they went to St. Louis, they got their doors blown off. But the games played in Winnipeg, it was always dramatic at the end and Winnipeg getting it done. But I never thought in a million years I would see a game where a team in Game 7 with their season on the line tied up with under 2 seconds left and then win it in double overtime. Remarkable. Remarkable. So Winnipeg's moving on, and I wonder if this frees them up a little bit, because all they had to hear is them in the first round, Hellebuck, oh, come the postseason, the Jets aren't really who they are in the regular season. They got the first one out of the way. And what's waiting for them is maybe the best team left in the Western Conference, which is the Dallas Stars, who played in an all-time series themselves against the Colorado Avalanche. So Dallas, for the entire postseason so far up to this point, have not had Miro Heiskanen, their best defenseman, and one of the five best defensemen in the NHL, and Jason Robertson, one of their best players, if not their best forward. That's who they've been without. And I got to tell you, the way they responded in that third period of Game 7 was one of the all-time shocks I've ever seen. And yes, Winnipeg came back last night, and that was surprising. And we've seen teams come back before. But the Colorado Avalanche are a perfectly coached hockey team throughout the regular season. They got depth. They added players like Coyle, like Nelson, just to add depth. They still have MacKinnon, Makar, Devon Taves. They have all these guys. They got Georgiev out. They finally got a real goalie in Blackwood. Like, the Colorado has won a cup with this group. They know how to win. Landeskog's back as well. They just got veteran, smart players in that locker room. And they're up 2-0 in the third period. And Dallas scores 3 unanswered late. 3! Then they add the empty netter to make it 4-2. And the big thing everyone's talking about right now, and rightfully so, just because it's a great story, is how it's Mikko Rantanen who ended Colorado's season. If you don't know, Mikko Rantanen was on the Colorado Avalanche for a long time, was on those cup-winning teams. He was a 100-point player playing alongside Nathan MacKinnon. He was one of the league's most dominant forces. They couldn't come together on agreement on an extension. He wanted to stay, but Colorado didn't want to give him what he wanted. They trade him to Carolina, and Carolina was not a good fit for him. That Rod Brind'Amour style of play is not fit for what Mikko Rantanen does well. So right before the trade deadline, he gets flipped to Dallas. And he was doing okay in Dallas. He was like a point-per-game player in Dallas. But then, the last four games of this series, Mikko Rantanen took it over. What do you have, 12 points in the last four games? He killed them. And he had a hat trick on Saturday night in Game 7 in the third period to go along with an assist. He was involved in every single goal, and he knocks out the team that traded him. What a revenge story. What a revenge story. And if you're the Colorado Avalanche, you got to be stunned. You're up 2-0, veteran group, and then you let that happen in the last 15 minutes of that hockey game, and you don't even get it to overtime. And I know people are commenting on the penalty on Drury. I understand that, but it's a close, close call in the defensive zone. But once they called that penalty, I knew it was going to happen. All the momentum was with Dallas. And they have just a red hot hockey player in Mikko Rantanen who wants the hockey puck to end his former team who didn't want him. I understand that. It was a questionable penalty. If it's in the neutral zone, it probably doesn't happen. Sure, I understand all the arguments. But still, the refs called it. Dallas get a power play. They get the goal, put on an empty netter. And they're moving on. Just a remarkable Game 7. It was all over the place. And I think Colorado scored at the top of the third period. So I think it was 1-0. And then in the third period, they scored early to make it 2-0. And then the Dallas came on like gangbusters after that. Just a remarkable series. And if you're Dallas, think about this now. Yes, you have Mikko Rantanen, who's just playing out of his mind right now. We'll see if he continues this play into the second round. Matt Duchene still there. Wyatt Johnson still there. Sagan still there. Jamie Benn still there. Then they get to add this kid named Jason Robertson, who's pretty good. Oh, wait. Miro Heiskanen's going to be there? How about this kid Thomas Harley, who was just phenomenal this past year for the Dallas Stars? People remember how good he was at the Four Nations. He was unbelievable. Lyubushkin's been good. Look at this lineup. They're just deep everywhere you look. They have Mikael Granlund, Roope Hintz, and not to mention Jake Ottinger's one of the league's best goaltenders. So it is a very, very realistic possibility that the Dallas Stars win the Stanley Cup. They're deep, great defensively, good goaltending, well coached, and you need some breaks. You need some breaks. Think of when the Bruins won in 2011. How many breaks they got? Chicago in 2010. Chicago in 2013. You can just go on and on and on and on about the breaks. The 2009 Penguins. Breaks teams got when they went on to win the Stanley Cup. They got a break. They got a power play with 3 minutes left after being scorching hot on a questionable call. Don't have to go to overtime. They win the hockey game. And that's really all it needs. Now they're on in the next round where they will play Winnipeg. So these two teams who just played two unbelievable seven-game series are now meeting up this week. And I'd be rooting for Winnipeg. I want a Canadian team to go far. But Dallas on paper, and I know Winnipeg were the better team in the regular season. But I don't know Scheifele's health. And after a Game 7 like that, are they going to be ready for Game 1? We shall see. We shall see. But it's going to be a phenomenal series, and I want to know when will Heiskanen and Robertson come back. Because if you drop those two guys in the lineup, I don't see anyone matching up talent-wise with the Dallas Stars. The other series out west, which we'll get to the Eastern Conference after the first break. Vegas, Minnesota, that was a great series. The Golden Knights end up moving on. And then LA and Edmonton. And through two games, it looked like Edmonton were done. McDavid had the miraculous, I'm saying McDavid, not the Oilers. McDavid dragged the Oilers back in game one to tie it 5-5. And then only to have Philip Deneau score with 20 seconds left. Like a minute after he ties it. They lose game one. Then they just get blown off the ice in game two. And they were looking like they're going to get swept after the first period of game three. But the Oilers are resilient. And it could be that LA and that coaching staff, Hiller and that coaching staff, just know what the hell they're doing. They would play their game for two periods, get a lead, and in the third period, they kind of sit back and they'd let McDavid, Draisaitl, Hyman, Nugent Hopkins, Bouchard just skate all over them in the third. Cost them in game three, they came back and won. Cost them in game four in that miraculous overtime game, which they tied up late in the third. And then they outplayed them in games five and six. They found their groove. And LA should be kicking themselves because if they just played their game in the third periods of games three and four, then they're in the second round. Edmonton's goaltending was a mess. Still, I don't know what Pickard's going to do, but he's playing better than Skinner was. Edmonton were just reeling. They were too banged up. They're trying to fit Evander Kane in the lineup. They're trying to fit all these other pieces. And it just wasn't working. LA were dominant in the first two periods of the first four games. It was there for them. And if there was a year to get Edmonton, it was this year, and they still couldn't do it. So this is what now? 4 years in a row where the LA Kings fall short, lose to the Edmonton Oilers? That's tough. That's tough. And I thought they'd do it this year. Nothing against McDavid, nothing against Draisaitl. I just looked at the injuries. I was like, oh boy, no Matthias Ekholm trying to put Evander Kane back in the lineup. Is Arvidsson healthy? Like, how are these guys going to be okay? Stuart Skinner's been awful, which he was, and they made the switch to Pickard, which credit to Chris Knobloch. He made that move at the right moment. Because I don't know what the hell was wrong with Stuart Skinner. He could not stop a beach ball. It was horrendous. So Edmonton moves on in six games, and they really picked it up the last two games, which is a worrying sign if you're Vegas. But that series, on paper, Vegas should take care of business. But there is this thing called destiny. And are the Oilers just destined to go back to the final again? We shall see. But you look on paper, sure, Adin Hill may be a worry for some in Vegas, but they still have Eichel there. You still have Pietrangelo there. You still have Hanifin there. You still have all these guys there in Vegas with Stanley Cup caliber experience, have won a cup together. Home ice, all signs point to Vegas. But it's going to be interesting because McDavid and Draisaitl, they're game changers. And Corey Perry's fit nicely with them on that line. Evan Bouchard, who just had a terrible regular season, didn't make Team Canada at the Four Nations because of it, seems to have turned the corner and looks like the Evan Bouchard of last year. But I'm sorry, Vegas, they have Eichel, they have Stone, Shea Theodore, Barbashev, Hanifin, Hurdle, Pietrangelo. It's just depth everywhere you look. And they played a few years ago in Vegas, got him. I think the year Vegas went on to win the cup, right? Yeah. So, we'll see. But this is a series that I cannot wait. The Any Oilers series I'm so excited for. They're always entertaining. A, because they have the two best players in the world who are insanely exciting. But B, their back end usually is a mess and their goaltending issues are a mess that anything can happen. But if they get Ekholm back, I'm not sure on his injury status, if he'll be ready in time for game one. The Oilers are a better team now than they were game one against the Kings. Evander Kane's starting to get there. Bouchard's a much better player now. McDavid and Draisaitl look healthy. Like the Edmonton's playing good hockey. And they showed it the last two games against the LA Kings. So that's going to be a phenomenal series. And obviously, Winnipeg and Dallas is going to be a phenomenal series as well. And you could argue that that Dallas-Colorado series was the Western Conference Final. Because I would have liked Colorado against Winnipeg. And I probably would have liked Colorado against either Vegas or Edmonton. And I said it when that series was announced and confirmed. That series is a Western Conference final type of series. And it went seven games, and it almost went to overtime in the seventh game as well. There was not much separating Dallas and Colorado. There wasn't. We're going to get to a quick break, and we come back. We'll talk a bit about the Eastern Conference playoffs and the Stanley Cup playoffs. I cannot believe the Toronto Maple Leafs won another round. I know they should have beat Ottawa, but it's still weird to say the Leafs won a round. They get the defending Stanley Cup champions, Florida, in the next round. We'll preview that, as well as Washington and Carolina. Not to mention the NBA postseason is into the second round. We'll talk about that as well, and where things stand with the Blue Jays in the American League East. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Thank you so much for listening. We're back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Festival Bleu Bleu, presented by SiriusXM, is back for its seventh edition. From June 20th to 23rd, Carlton-sur-Mer will come alive with performances by Ariane Roy, Petit Beliveau, Clopel Gag, High Classified, Uri, Gus Engelhorn, Belly, Maggie Merlin, and many more. Don't miss the epic Beach Electro Night, the Artisan Market, the classic Mussels and Fries Dinner, the Water Skipping Tournament, and plenty of other fun activities. Contact your friends and plan your Gaspésie getaway. Tickets and details at festivalbleubleu.com.
Do you want to have a discussion about movies?
You talking to me?
And have the iconic sounds of cinema? Well, tune in to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds every Tuesday mornings from 8 to 9 a.m. only on CJLO 1690 a.m. with your host, Remy.
Are you not entertained?
I haven't really talked to him, but he looks pretty down.
He looks pretty down.
Yeah, well, maybe we should cheer him up then.
What do you suppose we should do?
Well, does he like butter tarts?
I was lying on the grass of Sunday morning of last week, indulging in my self-defeat. My mind was thugged on least, but it's all twisted around the meat. You would have done. So I missed a million miles of fun. I know it's up for me.
If you still must have changed,
making sure I'm not in too deep.
If you still must have changed,
keep bursting on my feet.
If you still must have changed.
Back here on the Tommy John Show. If you're wondering the schedule for the Stanley Cup playoffs this week, we have game one of Florida and Toronto that starts this evening. Can't wait for that series. That's an 8 o'clock start tonight. Then we get two tomorrow. We get Carolina, Washington at 7 o'clock tomorrow, which is Tuesday. Edmonton at Vegas at 9:30. Then Wednesday, we get the game two of Toronto and Florida and game one of Dallas and Winnipeg. So there you go. So game one tonight, we have one lone game tonight, and it's Leafs-Panthers, 8 o'clock. Tomorrow, you get two, and then you should get two the rest of the way, it looks like. Yeah, Carolina, Washington tomorrow, Edmonton, Vegas tomorrow, and then game one of Winnipeg and Dallas on Wednesday. They're giving those teams a little bit of a breather after those seven-game series, which wrapped up last night. So we head to the Eastern Conference, and that Ottawa-Toronto series, the Battle of Ontario, was fantastic, in my opinion. That was the one series from the East. Nothing against Montreal-Washington. Montreal played them tough game one, game two, and game four, like, they were with them the whole way, and it just, the breaks did not go their way, and they end up losing in five games. That Tampa series was a bit weird. I thought that one would go seven games. But Florida, come postseason time, they just have the players. And not to mention, they add a guy who's always produced in the postseason, one of the great postseason players of all time, and Brad Marchand onto the lineup, who still has a lot left in the tank, in my opinion. You add him into that lineup, he was a perfect fit. And Tkachuk's healthy now. Just the list goes on. I can list the Florida Panthers players for the next hour and what they mean to the team. So Florida, they got unbelievable depth, and they took care of business against Tampa Bay rather easily, considered. Like, I was shocked. I thought that was a seven-game series, and I was honestly leaning Tampa because Tampa was playing so well coming into the postseason, and they took care of them in five. Took care of them with ease in game one, shut them out in game two, and in game five, they were dominant. So credit Florida. Now they get the Leafs on the road. Let's see what happens. The one time Toronto has won a series and went in the last 20 years, they played Florida in the second round and it didn't go well for them. They lost in five games. And that was 2 years ago, I think, now. Yeah. So that series, I would lean Florida based on experience. And nothing against Toronto. This is the best Leaf team of the Big Four era for postseason play, in my opinion. They dressed the back end. They gave Chris Tanev a boatload of money. They traded for Carlo at the deadline. They still have Morgan Riley there. And a big piece to this puzzle, Oliver Ekman-Larsson was fantastic. Fantastic for Florida when they won the cup last year. So they added him to the back end as well. And he's been battling injuries, I understand that, but he seems to be healthy. And that Toronto back end is much better for the postseason than in years past. Another big thing that's different is they have Anthony Stolarz in net. In the past, it's been the Ilya Samsonovs. It's been the James Reimers of the world. It's been those kind of goalies. And now Stolarz, who I know has been a backup for a long time in this league, had a phenomenal year, and he played very well in that series against Ottawa. He kept them in that series at times. Game two, game three in that Ottawa series, Stolarz stole it for him. So now they have the best goaltending play they've had in a long time, and they have the best defensive playoff play in a long time. So where is that all that pressure goes? It goes on the big four up front. Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Tavares. How many times have we said that on this show? There's no more excuses now. No more. They're great on the back end. Finally got good goaltending. Even their bottom six. Oh my God, it's crazy. You acquired Scott Laughton at the deadline. He's fitting well in that bottom six role. Domi can play minutes in that bottom six. How about look it down the list of guys who help out? Max Pacioretty scored a game winner. Like, these are the Yarncroak. Like, guys like that. No one cares about that. It's the big four. And if you want to include Nyes is a great hockey player, but it's the big four. They've been there the longest. Nyes is a young kid. He's not lumped into that group. It's the big four. And if the Leafs want to finally break through and make a conference final, they're going to need them in the worst way. Because even if Stolar stands on his head and the defense plays great, if those four don't produce, they're out. Because I know Barkov's going to produce. I know Tkachuk's going to produce. I know Marchand's going to produce. I know Bennett, Reinhardt. Those guys are going to produce. Can your big guys match? And that's what it's going to come down to. My prediction right now, I'll take Florida in six games. I'm going to take Florida in six games. I think Bobrovsky will play well. And I just love the depth and the depth scoring they get. So I'm going to take the defending champions in six games. The other series, Carolina and Washington. And I have to say, this might just be because I watched every second of that Montreal-Washington series. I'm big on the Capitals. And a lot of people were counting them out down the stretch, even though they had the best record in the Eastern Conference because they weren't playing well. But my mentality was, hey, they're just trying to get Ovi this record. They've clinched the one seed pretty much in the Eastern Conference. They got off to a red hot start, and that's a bonus that you get to take some time off at the end of the year and kind of slack off a bit. If you play well early in the year, you get a buffer. And they played so well to start the year that they had a chance and an opportunity to get Ovi the record this year, and they force-fed him the puck. Was it best for the team in the short term? No. But it was all about getting Ovi that record. And if they can deny it all they want, it was evident. And what happens? Everyone, oh, Montreal is a bad matchup. They haven't been playing well. I don't know. They are built to do things in the postseason. And that argument was irrelevant. Because as great as St. Louis played down the stretch, they're out. And as well as Minnesota played down the stretch, they're out. And that's the reality. Washington from October have been one of the three best teams in the league. And yes, they had the dip at the end of the year when Ovi was chasing Gretzky. And that was about it. But if you watch them against Montreal, and it could be Montreal's a young team inexperienced, which is a bad matchup, but I had to hear a lot of people beforehand saying Montreal can get them. But what shocked me was the physicality of this team. And Jacob Chychrun, what a move that was. It was good for both teams. Jensen's done good things for Ottawa, so I'm not knocking what the Sens did. But Jacob Chychrun has done wonders to this Washington Capitals team. Wonders. Dylan Strome was a top three pick. Oh, he's a bust. He's a bust. He comes to Washington. He's becoming one of the league's better players. Duhaime's been awesome. Beauvillier, Nick Dowd, Mangiapane, Connor McMichael, Tom Wilson, Dubois playing a role. Radish. Not to mention Ovechkin's still there, and they're getting Vezina caliber play from Logan Thompson. And they have this guy named Tom Wilson who likes to stir things up in the playoffs. And it was getting away for them a little bit. They lost game three. We're down in game four. The Bell Center was rocking. And Tom Wilson's hit on Carrier changed the entire series. They scored right after the tie of the game. And the life was sucked out of the Bell Center. They ended up winning the game in regulation and ended them in game five. Tom Wilson has that kind of an impact. He does. And he had that impact on that series. He was phenomenal. So nothing against Carolina. That was a fine series they played against New Jersey. But also New Jersey didn't have Jack Hughes and they weren't the same team. But still, they took care of business. And they won that game in overtime in game five when they were down and out. Credit them. They got good players. I love Sebastian Aho. Brett Burns still doing great things. But to me, what I saw from Washington in the postseason, how can I not pick them? They're the better team in the regular season. They're bigger. They're stronger. Protas hasn't really even played much. And he's back in the lineup. And they had some time off. Logan Thompson, I know he played after getting injured in game three. He's had some time to recover. So I'm going to favor Washington in that series. I was incredibly impressed. And that coach Carberry, Spencer Carberry, has done an unbelievable job. And he's probably going to win the Jack Adams because of it. So credit Washington. And honestly, credit Carolina. They've won now, a playoff series in each of the last 7 years. So Carolina's fantastic hockey team. I just don't think they have the star power to compete or the size to compete. I don't. So I'm going to favor Washington. I'll go five, maybe six. I feel like everyone says six games. I'll go five. I'll go Washington in five, Florida in six in those ones in the Eastern Conference. The West, I'm picking Dallas, even though I want Winnipeg to win. I'll pick Dallas and I'll do six again. And then Edmonton, Vegas. I'm rooting for Edmonton. I'll go Vegas in seven. I'll go Vegas in seven. Even though I am praying Edmonton gets through that series, I want them. I'll be wearing my hypothetical Oilers jersey. I'm going to be all in on the Oilers. But I just think Vegas is not an ideal matchup for them. But McDavid and Draisaitl alone could easily take that series away from Vegas. They could. But if there was one thing I can tell you guys about Washington, which if you live in Montreal and you watch the series, you know, is, man, are they physical. They just bullied Montreal in that series. Outside of that Tom Wilson hit on Carrier, it was Chychrun was always laying the body. Van Riemsdyk was using his body. Pierre-Luc Dubois, when he plays with an edge, he's a tough player to contain. So, I really like Washington in that series. And Washington, it would be a tough out for whoever gets to the Eastern Conference Finals between Florida and Toronto. I really like Washington, and I was very, very impressed. Quickly over to the NBA. So we had Game 1 of Indiana and Cleveland yesterday. And Cleveland, I can't believe it, losing at home in Game 1, 121-112. Tyrese Haliburton was all over the place. He was blocking shots. He was doing everything. He had 22, 13, and 3. Just a really good performance by Indiana, who people forget, keep saying that, they were in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. Remember, everyone wanted Knicks, Celtics, New York Knicks, Boston Celtics, Knicks, Celtics. No, Indiana ruined that, if you remember, which people forget. And yes, Indiana got swept, and there were injuries down the stretch for them. I understand that. But they're a very good basketball team. And even during the regular season, I posted a video. Right when the NBA season was starting, I posted a video saying, in the East, I know people like Boston, for obvious reasons, and New York, but don't rule out Indiana. I said, don't rule out Indiana. And here they are again, Indiana. I'm not saying they're going to beat Cleveland, but they're going to play them tough. This thing's going 6 or 7 games. It is. And then the other game from last night, was Golden State getting by Houston. So the Warriors are into the second round, and they will have a nice little matchup with the Minnesota Timberwolves, which would be fun. That tips off tomorrow. And then on, was that Saturday, Denver beat the Clippers with ease in Game 7. With ease. 120-101. Nikola Jokic just didn't even have to do much. He had 16 points, 10 rebounds, 8 assists. That game was over. Going into the fourth quarter. Over. So the matchups, if you didn't know, we had Game 1 yesterday between Indiana and Cleveland. So that's 1-0 Indiana with a big road win. Tonight we have Knicks and Celtics, Nuggets and Thunder. Denver taking on the number one seed of Oklahoma City Thunder. The two MVP favorites. It's probably going to go to Shea, but the two guys who are running away with the MVP odds is the Jokic and SGA. So Nuggets and Thunder. Warriors and Timberwolves, like we mentioned, tomorrow, along with Game 2 of Indiana and Cleveland. But New York-Boston, that rivalry gets another chapter, which I'm looking forward to. I like my Celtics in that one, though. I do. Even Detroit almost took the Knicks 7 games. I know they lost was in 5. But the Knicks, it was not easy for them. It was far from easy. I guess they won in 6. They won 6. My bad. They almost took them to 7 games. And they won, and that was a bit tough for them. So I'm going to pick my Celtics in that one, obviously. I'll probably pick Oklahoma City, but Nikola Jokic is a problem for them. And then Golden State and Minnesota, that is a phenomenal series. Phenomenal series. So I can't wait for that. We quickly head over to Major League Baseball. And there's a lot of interesting things going on. Obviously, the Yankees are doing well, but if the Toronto Blue Jays are going to be kicking themselves about this weekend, because they had that game won, absolutely won, on Saturday afternoon. They're up 3-1 in the 9th inning, and then just a terrible, terrible outing. Terrible outing by Yimi Garcia. Just awful. Brutal. Gets the bases loaded, and then it was a grand slam. Grand slam in the bottom of the 9th inning by, what was his name? Number 10. Jeez. Sheneman, I think, on the Guardians. Grand slam, and they blow the game. And that one was a killer. Then they follow that up with another stinker on Sunday. So the Blue Jays, man, they were had something good going. They were winning a few games, had a winning streak going into the weekend, and in that game on Saturday, just really, really killed them. And we're still early in the year, and they're only 3 games back of the Yankees. I understand that. But they're 16 and 18. And this team should be a lot better than that. They have let great pitching performances by Gausman, by Bassett, just mean nothing. Wasted great performances because they either can't get the runs or Schneider pulls the pitcher in the seventh inning and the relievers can't get him to the finish line. So whatever the reason is, Toronto should be miles better than what they are right now. Same goes with the Red Sox. The Red Sox are at 18-18, and I'm as a Red Sox fan, they should be a hell of a lot better than that. The biggest surprise in baseball may be the Detroit Tigers, who are 22-13, playing 630 baseball right now. Won 7 of their last 10. They're leading the American League Central. The American League West, it's the Mariners with a 2-game lead over the Oakland A's, who are putting on a good year, or whatever you want to call them, the Sacramento A's, whatever they are right now. And then the big, big surprise, not surprise, is the National League West is still dominant. You have the Padres and the Dodgers around that 670 mark. 23-11 the Dodgers are. The Padres are 22-11. Then you have, listen to this, the San Francisco Giants at 22-13. So you have three teams in that division playing over 600 baseball. The Dodgers at 676, the Padres at 667, the Giants at 629. Not to mention the Arizona Diamondbacks are at 18-16, who'd be right there in the American League, and they're the fourth team in the National League West. National League Central, the Cubs playing great baseball. They're at 21-14, leading the way in the Central, 3-game lead on the Cincinnati Reds. The New York Mets, 22-13, they lead the way, playing 630 baseball in the National League East. They have a 2.5-game lead over the Phillies, and a 6-game lead over the Nationals. And if you're wondering if you're an Atlanta Braves fan, 15-18, 6 games back of the Mets in the National League East. We're going to get into a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk more about the Shador Sanders situation and why I think he could possibly start week one, and who I think has won the NFL offseason thus far. My name is Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. We're back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
To the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Blue. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
Hi, and welcome to the show tonight. Tonight we have
the best new music.
But right now, let's check out the changes in this week's
CJLO
Top 30.
Charts and Crafts, counting down the best new artists played at the station. Every Friday at noon, only on CJLO 6090 AM.
Back here on the Tommy John Show. So, what a race that was in Miami yesterday. Oscar Piastri getting it done, and a McLaren 1-2. And Piastri's won now, what, 4 times this year. So he's got a bit, little bit of a gap, but still early on the year. Early on in the year. I want to know what the hell has happening to Ferrari. My guys out there. Lewis is like, why the hell did I come out here? This is a clown show. So last week we spent some time on Shador Sanders. And we're going to spend a little bit of time on him now, over here the last 9-10 minutes of the program. So he falls in the 5th round. And we said last week, hey, maybe this is not a terrible thing for Shador Sanders. Everyone's going after him, saying he had the worst draft process of all time with interviews and all those things. But he still ends up in the situation that people thought he would end up in, and that's the Cleveland Browns. Just not second overall or top of the 2nd round. Ended up being the 5th round. And he ends up with Cleveland, who also took a quarterback in the process with Dylan Gabriel. Okay. But the real thing I like about Shador Sanders going to the Browns is he might be their best option. Now, I'm not saying he's going to start week one. We all believe Joe Flacco probably is going to do that. Or if not Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, just because they've had NFL experience. But I have zero doubt in my mind that he'll beat out Dylan Gabriel. If he's committed, if he works hard, and it sounds like he is going to, he's ticked off that he fell in the draft, he's going to work his tail off. And just from a talent perspective, mechanic perspective, college performances and everything, he should beat out Dylan Gabriel rather easily. So the next question is he better than Kenny Pickett? I think he is. Then the next question is how well will Joe Flacco play? Because a few years ago, Joe Flacco played with the Browns and he led them to the postseason. So if Joe Flacco plays at that level again and the Browns defense plays like it did then it's probably Joe Flacco's job. But if Joe Flacco starts off 0-3, 0-4, why would it not be Shador Sanders? And nothing against Kenny Pickett. I'm sorry. Nothing against Kenny Pickett. But you got to start Shador Sanders. So considering where he would have went, the Giants, you have 2 veterans in front of him. New Orleans, maybe they throw him in right away. Who knows? But they probably play Rattler first just to ease him into the process. This might be the best situation and maybe the best chance to be a long-term starter in the NFL. They have talent on the field. They took Harold Fannin in the draft. They still have Njoku. They still have Jerry Jeudy. They took the Judkins kid right from Ohio State in the draft. I think they did that. Invested in the offensive line. Kevin Stefanski is a good coach. Same system from Pat Shurmur. We heard the whole thing. So if Shador Sanders is committed and he works hard and he takes the job seriously and wants to prove all the scouts wrong, saying, you passed on me several times over and you all need quarterbacks. If he does that and plays well, then the Browns are going to start him. That's what it is. As much as they want to say it's, oh, we love Dylan Gabriel and Kenny Pickett, I don't know. Shador Sanders is miles better than those guys talent-wise. So, again, for the 100th time, if he works hard, trains, and it looks like he is, and he's motivated, then why can't he start in the league? Why can't he? I thought he was going to be a top 10 pick. Most people did. So I got to tell you, man, this is as bad as it looks now for Shador Sanders. Oh, my God, I cost myself a boatload of money. Oh, my God. Listen, your dad has a boatload of money. He makes $12 million a year, $11 million a year being the head coach of Colorado. Not to mention the amount of money he made when playing. You drive in a Rolls Royce already. You have your chains. You've made a ton of money in college already. This would be about working your tail off, proving all those guys wrong, and getting an opportunity with the Cleveland Browns. And an offense that you already know from college, with good surrounding talent, in a market that's starving for any kind of quarterback success. So I think it could work out. I really do. If he were, trust me, I bet Deion sent him down. He's like, listen, I don't know what the hell you said in those interviews, but those are done now. You just go focus on playing. You go focus on playing. That's really what it comes down to. Quickly, some teams that I thought have won the offseason. So I'm going to give you 3. I'm going to give you three, not my New England Patriots, even though I think they had an amazing offseason. I don't want to be a homer. Outside of the Patriots, who spent the most money in free agency, addressed the left tackle in the draft, addressed the skill position players in the draft. They had a really good draft to help Drake May. Defense got better. Okay, there's my little Patriots spiel. My number one team that I think did amazing things in free agency in the draft is the Minnesota Vikings. I love what the Vikings did. And yes, I know they lost Sam Darnold. They let him walk at $100-something million to Seattle, but they did pick J.J. McCarthy in the top 10 last year. Like, they did do that. So it's his team, and if you look at the surrounding talent on that team, yes, they already had Jefferson and Addison and Hawkinson and all those guys like that, but they looked at their weaknesses on the football team and they addressed them. They need to get better up front in the interior of their offensive line. They have Darius Shaw, left tackle, who's going to be back. Their tackles are fine. They need help at guard and center. They go out and they get Ryan Kelly from the Colts, the center. They go give Will Fries like $88 million, one of the better guards in football, to insert in the middle of that offensive line. They go get Isaiah Rodgers. They need help in the secondary. They go get him. They go get the other DB. Was it Tavier Thomas? They go get Hargrave to build bodies up front. He's a hell of a player. I really like what they did. Byron Murphy signed. Jonathan Allen signed with them, people forget. Guys who've had enormous success in the NFL coming in on defense. What'd they do? Oh, we need some more depth of the running back position. They go get Jordan Mason, who led the league in running for a little bit last year. When McCaffrey was banged up in San Francisco, George Mason was getting the rock, and he was being very good for them. They brought in Sam Howell to be a backup. They drafted Ty Felton in the third round. Ty Felton in the third round, and I watched him. I watched him at Maryland. He's a hell of a player. And nothing against Naylor. He's probably going to be the third receiver. So the Vikings, to me, had a phenomenal offseason. They needed help up front. They did it. They needed some help in the secondary. They invested in there. And they needed one or two players up front. Go get Hargrave and Allen for Brian Flores' defense. To me, Minnesota had a phenomenal offseason, and they are going to be a factor once again in the NFC. Also because of that coaching. Kevin O'Connell's phenomenal. Another team that I thought did phenomenal things in the offseason are the Chicago Bears. Caleb Williams is the former number one overall pick in the draft. He showed flashes of brilliance. Problem is, he was getting sacked 90% of the time. So what do they do? Trade for Joe Tooney. Sign the, Drew Allman, right? The center from Atlanta. They go get him. They go get the other guy from Jackson from the Rams. They just completely turned around that offensive line. Then in the draft, what do? They go get Colston Loveland, 10th overall, the tight end from Michigan. Then they get Luther Burden III from Missouri in the second round. So now Caleb Williams is going to have a much better offensive line. He still has DeAndre Swift there as his running back. They're going to have two good tight ends with Kmet and Loveland. Then they're going to have Roma Dunze, former top 10 pick. DJ Moore, who's one of the 15 best receivers in the world. And they drop in Luther Burden, who was supposed to be a first-round pick a year ago. So the Bears, to me, they wanted to help Caleb Williams. They wanted to make sure he had every opportunity to succeed, and they have done that. Another big winner for me. And I know this might sound crazy. I can't believe I'm saying this. The New York Jets. You know why? They got rid of Aaron Rodgers. Are the Jets going to make the playoffs? No. But what did they do? They went, they got a hard-nosed head coach, no BS, no messing around. We're going to build the team through the trenches, and we're going to punch you in the mouth. And it might take years, but we're going to build that culture in New York. I like that. They got rid of Devontae Adams, got rid of Aaron Rodgers. What they do? They take Membu, the tackle, from Missouri. They go get Justin Fields. They go get other offensive linemen. They're building out the trenches. And the Jets are going to stink, but they are turning a corner, and they're going to be a tough out for a lot of people. Love the Aaron Glenn hire. That's it for the Tommy John Show this week. We're back next Monday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern on CJLO, 1690 a.m. in Montreal. Remember to follow us at the Tommy John Show as well. We'll be back next Monday to wrap up round two, right? Or middle of round two of the NBA and NHL playoffs. See you guys. next week.